Приветствую вас на второй день нашей замечательной конференции TECHED.
Thank you for coming to the first session. I know it's early morning for most of you. Once again, if for those of you who didn't attend my sessions yesterday, my name is Taimur Hussain. I'm the Global Business Lead for Link. And I'm joined here by a couple of colleagues as well who are members of the Worldwide Voice team. So together we are presenting Link and some of its components and features throughout the day. I will today be talking a little bit about voice and some of the management of voice. We have Nikolai here as well. He'll have a session that'll have a deep dive in voice architecture and features and so on. And Mariusz, who will later be talking about video and conferencing. And then a great session on bandwidth planning that you should attend, specifically if you're concerned about voice and its effects on the network. I'd like to keep this one interactive. If you have any questions in English or in Russian, please feel free to ask them. We have translators available to translate the question. So more than happy to provide any answers or any feedback during the session if needed. I'd like to start by talking a little bit about where we're coming from, because I think it's very important to understand some of the voice investments that Microsoft has made in their unified communications product lineup. So we started introducing voice features in OCS 2007. So this is about 5 or 6 years ago when we started doing this. And we had some basic features that related to voice, mostly peer-to-peer and some of the other components of RCC and so on. And then we really made some huge improvements in OCS 2007 R2, by sort of creating a more robust SIP stack, interoperating more with IP PBXs and gateways and so on, providing audio conferencing services within OCS. So we made some great strides there. And then really, I think, Link 2010, which was released about 2.5 years ago, was really when we hit our voice stride quite significantly, because I would believe 80% of the product was focused on voice features. Voice features, back-end resiliency. So you can see a long list, not an exhaustive list, but a long list of features and functionality that was built into Link Server 2010 to be able to provide resiliency and some of the IP PBX features that we needed to have a credible voice solution. So that was Link 2010, and now we just launched Link 2013 into the market about a couple of months ago. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that and some of the aspects of that. I will not get into a lot of details on these features. Nikolai is covering that later today. But I will be covering a little bit of what's new and then talking a little bit about what happens when you actually deploy this workload. How do you manage it? How do you operate it? And then we'll talk a little bit about mobility as well. So let's talk a little bit about what the new things are. And again, this is a very high level at the moment. If you want to know more details, attend the session later. One of the first things we did is scale interop, right? So we had great scale in Link to provide, a redundancy, to provide high availability, to provide volumes of users. But we didn't have a lot of scale when it came to interop. We still had sort of these point and multi-point connections and so on. So the next thing that we did was we said, okay, we realize some customers may have a lot of points of interop, whether they're disparate PBX systems or gateways or other IP telephony solutions. So we scale the interop by providing SIP trunking peers from an end-to-end perspective. And I know that term is a little bit vague. We'll explain it later on during the day as well. But scaling interop was a very, very important thing that we did here. The other thing that's really critical to know is we've included some basic session management capabilities into the product. What does it mean to have session management or SBC-like functionality. What we basically had before Link 2013 was we had sort of a stateless routing mechanism where if a call came in inbound, it could only terminate on a Link environment or a Link infrastructure. And if a call was, you know, trunking between a Link system and another SIP peer, it wouldn't be able to do anything creative there. What we're doing now with session management is we're allowing Link to be a point of focus or a point of ingress and egress for your SIP traffic, right? So what this means is if a call comes in to Link, Link can decide based on routing capabilities whether it belongs on the Link server, or we need to terminate that on a separate SIP trunk going out. So we don't necessarily need to keep this call within Link. We can actually route between trunks in Link 2013 as well. And that's what we talk about when we say basic session management capabilities as well. So using this is a very powerful feature. And using this, you can make Link sort of your ingress point for all traffic, even the traffic that's destined for the IP PBX, or traffic that's destined for another PBX, or another system, another gateway. It can all come into Link, and Link can make those routing decisions for you based on the session management capabilities. This particular feature isn't necessarily new, but I like to talk about it in the voice context because it's important to know that Link provides this facility or this particular workload for dial-in conferencing natively. So you know how we are used to having audio conferencing bridges that we dial into and we put a passcode and put a number? That functionality is natively built into Link using one of our voice applications that we built based on our APIs. So conferencing services, native to Link, we don't have to think about it. The other application that I think actually is fairly important is basic ACD functionality, IVR-like functionality. It goes by many different names. But essentially, the ability to set up on a small scale queues and groups and agents to be able to route calls as they come in based on availability, based on queues, based on mechanisms like that. And the ability to manage a basic ACD environment through the web, through the web front end for management, to create the queues, to create music on hold, to create the menu system, the time of day system, and so on. All that functionality is out of the box. If you wanted to have a basic IVR, for example, when you call someone and you say press 1 for sales, plus 2 for operator, plus 3 for support, you can do that actually natively within Link. You don't need another solution to be able to do that. So basic ACD functionality is there. This is not a call center replacement functionality because it doesn't do skills-based routing and active monitoring and some of the advanced features that are required for call center, but certainly is a credible basic ACD solution. Just following up on that one as well, one thing that is new in Link 2013 is the ability to now have multiple managers for your ACD functionality. So let's say you create, in your company, you create 10 different IVR systems or 10 different numbers that terminate on an IVR system. And you want each IVR menu tree and each IVR solution to be managed by different people. You can actually do that. So the finance manager manages the finance IVR, the sales manager manages the sales IVR, and so on. That's a new functionality in Link 2013 that is available to you. So a lot of rich features coming in from this technology. So what I'm going to do for the next few minutes is I'm going to talk a little bit about quality. This is a question I receive a lot personally about what is really the quality of audio and media that we provide within Link. People are generally concerned about quality. I think it's a very important thing to worry about. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how we manage quality, what we can do to monitor it, what we can do to make it better. Before we talk about that, it's important to know the tools that we provide to be able to actively manage a deployment. We talked about this yesterday, where deploying voice or any workload within Link to your users isn't the end goal. The end goal is operating, maintaining it over the course of time to ensure success, ensure quality, ensure user adoption for the product, right? So I want to make sure that we capture really what are all the products, what is the suite of operations utilities that we provide to manage the solution, right? So it starts with SCOM, right? So you should be familiar with the SCOM by this point. It's System Center for Operations Manager, which is a Microsoft product that manages a bunch of different products from Microsoft. And SCOM has a Link add-on pack that can be used to very actively monitor and manage a Link deployment. So that's probably one of the more important tools. Within that, we have some performance counters, synthetic transactions, event logs, all of those things that can feed into SCOM to provide you real-time alerting and management capabilities as well. The second thing that's important from a voice workload perspective is QoE, what we call QoE. QoE stands for Quality of Experience. And what we do is we collect a bunch of records or a bunch of metrics around QoE every time there is a media transaction. And the way we do that is when two Link parties or a Link party and an MCU are engaged in a media conversation, whether it's video or audio or whichever one, when that call terminates, we take whatever statistics each client or each endpoint has seen over the course of that call. Something people don't realize is when Link clients are talking to each other or the MCU, there's two channels active. There's an RTP channel, which is where the media is flowing. And then there's an RTCP channel, which is the real-time control protocol channel. And on that channel, we are transmitting all the time network statistics to talk about what is the packet loss, what is the latency, what is the jitter, some of these network characteristics. And these network characteristics are very important because it allows us to determine what codec we should use and what sampling we should use for that codec as well. So in that RTCP channel, we have a lot of this information. And when the call is torn down, we collect all of that information on the duration of the call, and we send that to our monitoring server component. And the monitoring server then compiles this data from all the endpoints that were in that call and generates a great report to give you an idea about the MOS score, the quality of experience of that call, the network characteristics of that call, what devices were used, the duration, all of this rich information that I'll show you in a second. So that's very important to understand what the QoE metrics are. And you can definitely report on it and create a trend report to figure out, are there any times of day when the QoE metrics are suffering, or is there any other trend that there's something that we can find from there as well. The other thing that I talked about a little bit yesterday was user-facing diagnostics. We talked about this yesterday a little bit about that network health monitor with signal bars. There's a lot of input to the user that they receive from the client. Inputs like your device is causing echo, there's too many devices in the room, your volume is too low, your network connection may not be optimal. A lot of these pop-ups will show up within the Link client to give user feedback about the quality that they're experiencing or the other person is experiencing. So very important key element in our UI that provides that as well. So these are some of the things that we can use to monitor and manage the quality of our media stack as well. I'm not going to go into the detail of how this happens from a technical perspective. Essentially, we use MSMQ, which is Microsoft queuing mechanism on the servers, to collect the logs and then send them off in a serial fashion to the monitoring server, which then logs all of this information into the database as well. There's a separate database that's component that's associated with the monitoring server, which collects all this information for you to report on using SQL reporting services. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about what affects media quality, really, right? So the first thing that affects media quality is audio and video coding, right? The process of taking packets of voice or video and compressing them to a certain standard to send over the wire, that process is intensive, and sometimes depending on what coding you're using, that can affect quality as well. Network, definitely everybody knows that network performance is directly related to media performance as well. So that's another factor that may cause media quality degradation. The device you use, believe it or not, not all devices are created equally. I talked about the OIP program yesterday, about how we qualify devices. The device that you use, especially for audio, can make a huge difference in the quality that that the other party is perceiving as well. And of course, the environment, lastly. If you're doing a lot of voice, background noise, or some of the other things that interfere with echo cancellation and so on, will affect it. In lighting for video, lighting is a big deal. Sometimes people appear too dark, too bright. Lighting is a big deal when it comes to video quality as well. So what did we do in Link 2013 to improve some of these things? Some of the things that that we did to improve includes stereo wideband codecs for conferencing. So conferencing codec improvements across the board for audio and video. We introduced H.264 SVC codec for video conferencing, which is something that we worked on with a bunch of different vendors as part of our participation in USIF Forum, to be able to come up with an interoperable, high-definition, non-intensive codec to provide great quality video across the board. So some of these things that we improved are already reflected in the QoE metrics that we capture that I talked about earlier in the slides. Okay. So what QoE metrics did we add in Link 2013? This is for those of you who have used QoE in Link 2010. We've now added video metrics for multi-view and single-view video, so you'll be able to see that in your reporting when QoE reports get sent back to monitoring server. We send metrics for each multi-view video channel, so you know you have this gallery of five video streams. For each video stream, we're able to provide QoE metric data about that as well. And now we will also be able to tell you when not only was voice a bad or poor experience using the MOS score industry standard explanation, but we can also tell you when there was a bad or poor video experience based on the data that we collect from QoE metrics. So very important changes that we added there as well. Some things that we added for audio. Audio already had a very rich set of QoE metrics, but we added the ability to do stereo audio usage specifically for conferencing as well. And then we improved some of our audio healer metrics. So for when I talk about healer, I want to make sure everybody understands within our codecs we have the ability to do some correction. So for example, forward error correction, which is FEC, is there if we see a bunch of packet loss. We also have other capabilities built into the codec that are meant to heal the voice workload. So a lot of those have been added back in to the audio metrics as well. So let's take a look at some of these reports and what you can find. Now, some of the reports that I'm going to share with you are canned reports that were out of the box, and when you install Link 2013, you'll have this capability to be able to report this. So I'm going to show you some of these views. It's important to note that we actually publish the schema of this database to you. So if you wanted to build your own reporting engine, just to have some SQL query, pull out the data, and represent it in any format that you prefer, you can do that as well, right? So in this particular example, we have location-based audio quality. So if I input my locations into Link server, and I can break that down by locations to find out on Redmond Wi-Fi location, so all the people who are connected over wireless, I had round trip delay time of X. I had a loss packet loss duration of 57 milliseconds. 67%, 0.67% packet loss, jitter, all of my metrics are there as well. And then I can expand this by clicking the call list to find out exactly all the calls that were made by people connected to that location, which is a wireless access point in Redmond, right? So really some key statistics there as well, straight off the bat to be able to give location-based information. In this particular example, I see that Redmond Wi-Fi, which is in the B30 West Wing, is seeing some really large delay in round trip, and also seeing a lot of lost packets, a lot of burst loss duration, right? So this is causing a lot of poor voice quality in that location. So right off the bat, at a glance, I can see what's going on in that particular location. We also have a session reliability summary page. So we have a dashboard that gives you a lot of information. I think I have a screenshot of that dashboard. But this particular session reliability will tell us how many failures are occurring over the course of time, right? And this will actually talk to you about modalities and what kind of, how many sessions we have. So for example, we have this many sessions for IM and presence, this many for voice and video and application sharing. But we can actually see that application sharing sessions fail quite a bit. We have 14% failure rate by modality. On the flip side, we don't actually have that high a failure rate on audio and video, almost no failure rate in IM, and a little bit on file transfer. So it's very great to see these particular statistics at a glance. This is peer-to-peer. In conferences, right, what kind of workloads are we using? That's voice, that's IM, that's video, or that's application sharing. So we can see how many sessions are going on, what the failure rate is. It's 4% failure rate for application sharing in this particular example. So we can find out why, what the scale is, what's going on at a glance. Okay. We can also trend this data. So we can trend it out over a week or a month or 3 months, however you feel like it's most important to get a glimpse of your deployment to find out, okay, what is the percentage of failures and success, unexpected failures, expected failures, over the course of, this is a week, I believe, yes, it's a week. So you can find out over a course of a week and trend this data to understand a little bit more about what's causing in this deployment to happen. Okay. You can also see top failures to find out, okay, it's happening because this cannot route. Maybe there's a DNS issue, maybe there's an IP routing issue, and so on. So you can see the top offenders to understand maybe there's a quick solution to all these application sharing failures that we're seeing. Okay. We can also dig into the user activity report. So this is a great way to find out what's happening on a per user basis. So this is one particular user, which is, this is coming from Neil. And over one day, we can actually see all the sessions he's having. So he's got audio sessions, instant messaging sessions, there's times, there's a diagnostic ID. We can get a lot of information about that. And actually, you can drill down even further into this report to get very detailed statistics such as this for that particular session. So this is one particular session. Let's take a look at it. This happens to be a call. Let's take a look at what happened here. Everything was okay. There was an invite. There was a buy. Look at the rich data here. We can tell what device he was using. The person was using a device. We know that it was to the MCU. So this is an MCU code that we see. So this is a person who was in actually a conference call with the MCU. We can take a look at the time, what was happening. We can take a look at the error and what happened here, which is call terminated on media connectivity failure, some sort of ICE warning. So very important to be able to see and troubleshoot what's happening. So this would be your first step to figure out, okay, this is what happened, before you start logging and trying to figure that kind of stuff out. This is always turned on, so you get the monitoring server reports at any given time. Okay? So to summarize or to sum up, QoE provides metrics for troubleshooting, for planning, for quality, for management, right? All of the things that you need to actively monitor your deployment, manage your deployment to be able to provide guidance about capacity planning, about quality, about how it's performing on the network, any network capacity upgrades are all available to you out of the box. There's no separate product or solution you have to buy to be able to do all of these things. Okay? I'm going to switch into mobility. Before I do that, is there any other questions on the stuff that I covered around voice and management and so on? If there's any questions, please raise your hand. Otherwise, I'll move on to mobility. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about mobility. It's a great topic. It's very interesting to a lot of people. I covered some of it yesterday in my session, but I'll talk a little bit about what we're trying to do, right? So I mentioned something yesterday. I mentioned that our goal as Microsoft is to provide this communication experience that we call Link across all devices, right? We already have the capability to provide ubiquitous access inside and outside your company. So no VPNs required, no special hoops to jump through to be able to connect to Link when you're on the internet, anywhere on the internet. So that's very important. But we also want now the ability for people to use any device that they want to use to provide that experience as well. Whether you choose a Windows phone, an iPhone, an Android, an iPad, any of the Android tablets, a Windows 8 tablet, any of that experience that you wish to choose on those devices will be provided in our mobility story as well. So Link on the device you love, that's what we're trying to do. I mentioned something yesterday as well as targeting the form factor, and this is very important for us as well. So we want to make sure we understand how people use these devices as well. For example, I don't use my cell phone as something to share a presentation or to even view a presentation. The screen is too small. It's not a conducive form factor for me to do that. But I do use my Surface tablet for that purpose, right? I use my Surface tablet to consume presentation data, whiteboard data, poll data very often as well. So we're going to make sure that we target that form factor. We're going to make sure that we provide the capability that makes sense on the device that it makes sense on. So if you're using a tablet, an iPad, an Android, or a Windows 8 tablet, you'll be able to consume and present data very actively, right? If you're using a phone, you'll be able to be a participant in voice and video and conferences and over Wi-Fi, over 3G, all the great things that mobile devices do. You'll be able to provide that and have that experience based on the form factor. So let's take a look at what our goals were. What did we hear from yourselves, our customers, to really figure out where we were going and what the use case scenarios we were doing? So these were some of the goals that we were working with when we started planning for this generation or this release of product. And these are some of the things that we thought we should deliver, right? So let's take a look at them, right? First of all, our users told us they need to always be connected. Communications is one of the things that has to be always on. We need to be able to communicate with anywhere, no matter where we are or what we're using, right? So some of the scenarios that we were targeting for that is I want to know the status of all the people that I care about at all times, right? I can find the context that I want to do with relationships and expertise. And I can remain connected even if my cell, I don't have any coverage over cell. As an example, I'm not from Russia. I'm here and traveling internationally. I don't turn on my data roaming. But I'm on Wi-Fi and I'm on Link Mobile for Wi-Fi. And I've been talking to my colleagues and peers from all over the world during this conference using my mobile phone and my tablet. Those are some of the things that we want to deliver, right? The ability to control your presence. I talked a lot about presence yesterday and how important presence is, and it's really at the core of what we're trying to do for unified communications and how it ties into identity services. So the ability to control and manipulate that presence from any device based on any circumstance you may have. Ideally, the control of presence would be automatic. It would be based on either your calendar information or what we know about you. But if that isn't the case, we should still be able to manually control our presence, manually be able to tell our solution that now I can be found on these numbers. I want you to forward my calls. I want you to simultaneously try to find me. I'm available. I'm busy. I don't want to be disturbed. All of these things follow the rules of call routing that we have, and you should be able to control those at any given time. Communicating immediately, right? Finding out your missed calls at a glance. Being able to join meetings easily. This is one of the biggest things that I see with Link, which is a big improvement for us, is I don't have to, sometimes I'm guilty, sometimes I'm trying to join a conference call while I'm driving, which is a very, very bad and dangerous thing because I'm trying to first put the number in the phone, and then I try to look at my email, get the passcode, try to put it in. It's a recipe for disaster, right? So with Link, we want to be able to provide you one-click access to the meeting. We want you to be able to have a join button on that calendar, and we want you to hit that join button and be able to be dialed into the meeting automatically. We don't want you to dial in the numbers. This is not the right thing to do. So some of those key components, key aspects of the user experience we're trying to deliver is what we're trying to do for Link Mobile 2013. The other thing that users always told us is I want to use these advanced modalities and these advanced workloads wherever I am, whatever device I'm using. So video was a very big ask. People always asked us, can I do video over Wi-Fi, video over 3G from my Link client on my mobile phone or my tablet? I want to be able to see the other person. All modern smartphones now have a front-facing camera. So that's great. I want to be able to see the other person I'm talking to. I want to be able to hear them. I want to be a first-party citizen in this particular conference call over video, and we are excited to announce that we can actually deliver that capability over 3G or Wi-Fi capability. Okay. And then lastly, I want to be able to consume content wherever I am, whatever device I'm using. And this is fairly important as well. A lot of times I'm in meetings that I have to apologize to say I cannot see the data share because I'm on a device that doesn't support it. We want to make sure that other form factor devices, not necessarily your laptop or your PC, can also support consumption or presentation of data share. And we deliver that to tablet scenarios today. So those are some of the things that we're trying to deliver as part of Link 2013 mobility scenarios. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually walk you through a few of these videos that we have, small bite-sized videos, to talk a little bit about the experience that I'm talking about, right? So this is the experience on Windows 8. You can see the very fluid Windows 8 user experience. You see the Link client. You saw a little bit of it yesterday. Very smooth interface, very immersive with pictures. And then you can scroll down, take a look at your contacts. You can also go to your previous conversations to figure out what's going on and open those. And then you can also take a look at your voicemail. Your visual voicemail capability is built right into the client as well. So very rich set of features that are built right into the client to be able to provide at-a-glance information as well as optimized for touch and optimized for tablets and so on. This is an example of a peer-to-peer conversation that has video in it as well. As you can see, there's an IM channel, and the person switches to the video channel to have this undistracted view of a peer-to-peer video conversation. It looks very fluid. It looks very smooth. Similarly, in a conferencing experience, you saw this yesterday as well, we provide this sort of video feeds where we have a bunch of talking heads and the ability to switch between video and IM channels to be able to provide both functionalities to have a text-based conversation as well as switch to a video-based conversation and see really this immersive experience in a meeting. So when you're in a meeting, you're actually taking a look and participating with a lot of different people, and we want to deliver that as well. The other thing that we're trying to provide is sort of active speaker. You see this subtle blue box that we provide. So when somebody's talking and they're providing information in the meeting, this blue box will change to who the active speaker is. Very subtle, you cannot even tell, but the first time you sort of attend this meeting, you see this active speaker switching, and it's actually very, very cool to see it going back and forth between who's talking and who's listening. So this is a great display of that technology as well. Also, you'll notice that we have two rows. We call them the standing row and the sitting row. So what happens is the five most active speakers are put to the standing row, and the rest of the people are on the sitting row. And Mariusz has much more details about how that works, when that works. Am I right? Okay. And then finally, a full fidelity meeting that we saw yesterday. So we saw a video stream of all these five people. Then we saw that we can shift to the IM workload. But then there's also a data share for data consumption here. So we can shift to that as well. And you'll see the person who's presenting and speaking up in that corner with the data application share. So very undistracted view of how to consume this meeting on a tablet device, and we're going to build this experience across all of our tablet platforms. So very, very exciting, very, very great functionality and features with a smooth touch-based interface on this tablet. That was a Windows 8 tablet, by the way. A few things I'll cover over for mobility's sake as well. One of the things that we've made enhancements around is that we have now the capability to provide much more granular controls on when we do voice over IP. I'm not sure how it is for you, but where I live, 3G network coverage isn't great. So you have the ability to turn off voice over IP calls when you're on 3G, only use them on Wi-Fi, which is a great capability. So the way that this flow works is if a call comes in and the call goes to Alice over the PSTN, that's fine, that's normal, that's what we see today from a PSTN callback perspective. But if Alice, in this particular case, happens to be on a Wi-Fi network, then when Bob calls Alice and the client is registered to the home server over the data connection, the call will go directly to Alice over Wi-Fi. It never uses the PSTN. It never uses the channels to talk to Alice. So voice over Wi-Fi, voice over 3G is what we're trying to deliver, and the media stream flows directly between the two clients if possible, right? So that's sort of the experience that we want to deliver, and I wanted to make sure that you guys understood what we mean by voice over IP over Wi-Fi, right? The other thing that's different between our clients, and I think this is important, is that each app in Link 2010 Mobility had one endpoint and consumed a resource on Link 2010 on the server, right? But what happened was, if you had the Link app up and running on your phone and you left it, the mobility service tracked this activity. And if you didn't actually have the app open for 3 days, we deleted that endpoint registration. Right, so we delete that endpoint registration, and then you have to sort of open the app again to receive these push notifications and so on, because we don't know about the registration of this app anymore. What we're doing in Link 2013 now is we're actually having a shared registration and a static registration for all the endpoints, right? And so what happens is we use our APIs to create the registration for the user endpoint. So when you leave the app, if you're in Link Mobile and you exit out of it and you go back and you don't use it for a while, we still keep that. We delete the user endpoint, but we have the static registration. So we keep that state active. So you'll receive the push notifications. You'll receive all the calls. We'll wake up the app if something comes up. And we'll deliver whatever modality we're delivering. So whether it's a IM message or a call or a video session, we'll be able to deliver that to the app as well. So that's some of the enhancements and capabilities that we're building into Link 2013 and mobility as well. So I think that's I'm going to wrap up the presentation section there. I'll open it up to Q&A. This is my last session. So if you have any thoughts, any questions about Link in general, any messaging, roadmap, all of those kinds of things, please feel free to ask Russian or English, no problem. We have translators. So love to get your thoughts and feedback about the product as well.
Okay. Will you support BlackBerry as mobile client?
Okay. So the question is, will we support BlackBerry's mobile client? So it's a little bit more tricky to answer that question because BlackBerry has some more development guidelines because it has to work with their BEZ server, which is their BlackBerry Enterprise server, and they don't typically allow a lot of flexibility in what we can do in developing against that API. So we actually cannot develop an app for BlackBerry in our own. We have to work with BlackBerry to do that. And RIM has not had any inclination to do that as well. So at the moment, we have a BlackBerry app. It is supported. It's an IAM and presence app only. It doesn't have some of the rich functionality I was talking about. So we continue to see the support for that. But as Microsoft, we don't have anything else coming down the pipeline. Thank you.
I'm from Siemens Enterprise Communications. First of all, I'd like to ask you, what about that nice interface you've shown us while switching between video conferencing, instant messaging, and so on? is it available for all the platforms Link support? I mean, Android, iOS, and so on.
Yeah. So the question is, are we supporting the interface that we just saw? Is it going to be supported on iPad and Android? We are obviously developing on APIs for the platform, but our goal is to get as close to possible the same experience that you'll see on all the devices. So we don't want to have different experiences. If the iPad lets us create that experience, we will create that experience. But this swiping between the three panes is a very Windows 8 sort of functionality. It will be available in one way or the other on the iPad. I'm not sure if it will look exactly like that, but it will look very similar. Our goal is to keep all the interfaces on all mobile devices very, very similar.
Okay, one more question. You told us about the switching lines while using your mobile phone, switching from Wi-Fi, 3G, or PSTN standard line. Is it available for call swipe during the call? Can you switch between Wi-Fi, 3G, and so on?
Yeah. So the question is, is it available if you're on an active call and you want to change where the call is being placed?
Exactly.
So if you think about how this works, right? It's actually very complicated. If I'm connected to Wi-Fi, I'm connected to the TechEd network here. I have an IP address that belongs to TechEd, belongs to Microsoft, right? If I switch to 3G, I am now switching my IP to my mobile carrier, right? So let's talk about Wi-Fi to 3G switching for a second. The media stack where information is going back and forth from is fixed at the time of negotiating a call, right? So the other endpoint that's sending me media thinks they're sending me media to the TechEd IP address. If I switch to 3G, there's no way for me to inform that, oh, now my new IP is this one in time for real-time audio to switch over, right? So it's a much bigger challenge to be able to do that. What it would involve to be able to do that is for us to have some signaling agreements with the carrier, my cell phone carrier, to say if I go out of Wi-Fi transmission or into Wi-Fi transmission, please send the call to this phone number using the PSTN channel or the 3G network, make that connection happen. That doesn't exist today, unfortunately.
But you can switch it manually, for example, during the call. If you are leaving the Wi-Fi range, you can switch to...
No, not in an active call.
I mean, the possibility exists.
Not on an active call. You can't switch manually on an active call because that would mean having to exchange media candidates again, and that capability doesn't exist today.
Okay, and the last question. You've told us about the tablets and the possibility to work together, something like, I don't know, are you speaking about the collaboration, the using, the editing the documents together? Can you have the control of the document of the other party or something like this?
That's a great question. So I won't be able to share with you any information about iPad and Android capability today. because we're still in beta for the product, and we're just, you know, just about a month or two away from general availability of that particular one. When I talk about collaboration, I am talking about document sharing and document editing. I am talking about that. The ability to take control over somebody else's document doesn't exist today in the Windows 8 Experience client, but we are looking to improve that client at every basis. But you can annotate today. So if somebody's sharing a PowerPoint presentation, you can annotate along with that. You can participate in polls. But to take control over somebody's desktop, that feature is sort of missing from the Windows 8 user experience. It may be in the iPads and the Androids. We'll know in a couple of months. But generally speaking, we're looking to improve that portion of our product. Yeah. No problem.
Будет ли возможность отправлять офлайн?
Will it be possible to send offline messages both from both between Link clients and also from Link client to Skype?
If it will be possible to send offline messages between Link and Skype?
Send offline messages.
Yes.
Between Link and Skype. Okay.
Yes. In Skype, we have ability to send offline.
So the question is if we can send offline messages between Link and Skype. And the answer today is no. The reason is because Link doesn't support offline capability. If you send a message, it's for us, it's delivered in real time. We won't have that capability at launch. It's certainly something we can look to improve because Skype provides this capability natively. So perhaps it has a storing mechanism that we can leverage. But as of today, no, there will be no offline messaging. We have an offline messaging product within Microsoft. We like to call it Exchange. So we can use this one for, sorry, this was a joke, I'm sorry.
Hello. My question is actually quite simple. A lot of my customers use Skype over iPhone. They write messages, they make simple Skype-to-Skype calls, and most importantly, iPhone allows them to do video calls. So my question is Link 2013 going to have this feature, especially considering that Link is hosted in the Microsoft cloud? Well, Link is part of the E3 package, so two customers have iPhones. Will they be able to do a call from Link to Link on iPhone, and can they do video?
Hybrid deployment or pure Office 365.
Okay. So the question is, will it be possible to use my Link client to make video calls using Office 365 or hybrid to Link or Link to Skype?
Link to Link.
Link to Link calls. So the question is if we can use mobile clients with Office 365 with the new capability, and yes, the idea is you will be able to use Link 2013 mobile clients against Office 365 when it migrates to Link 2013. It's not available yet in Office 365, but as soon as it is, you will be able to, yes, to make video calls over mobile clients.
Сейчас просто линка нету конкретно, то есть сейчас, который сейчас линк, который в облаке, да?
Well, now the link that's in the cloud is Link 2010, so we're going to upgrade to 2013 very soon.
I know four words in Russian, and "da" is one of them.
When will application available in stores?
When will the application be available in stores? So I'm assuming that you're talking about the Link mobile application available in all the stores. Our target date for having the application availability is when we have general availability for Link, which will be sometime in the middle of Q1 of calendar year 2013.
Hello, thank you for your presentation. One clarification question about video capability.
So do we have some mechanism to restrict this video capability call, video call, because of internet connection? So what I'm asking is that in most cases, if we will let user let this video call and the internet connection is not very good for example, 3G or some remote locations, so in this case, user will be dissatisfied with the experience and they will claim link client, not internet connection. So do we have some mechanism to restrict because of internet connection?
Yeah. So so what there's a few interesting things that you mentioned here. When people are on unmanaged networks, the internet is an unmanaged network, there's very, very little we can do to control their experience. If they're on a wireless network or on a network that we manage, we have call admission control policies that we can implement to restrict this. But if they're on the internet and they're on 3G and they wish to make a video call with very bad reception, there's nothing an administrator can do to stop that. They can turn off the 3G video calling, which you know, if they have bad 3G coverage in their area like I do, you can turn it off. But there's nothing we can enforce to be able to user-facing diagnostic to say your network connection is not capable of handling video at the time. And the good thing about our media stack is we will fall back to the modality that's least a problem. So if a person is in a voice and a video call and the network bandwidth is congested, we'll drop the video component of that call and leave the audio there and provide the user with that message. So there's some input the user will receive, but I'm sorry, we cannot control the experience.
Таймур, по приоритизации трафика вопрос. Значит, ситуация такая.
Таймур, my question is about traffic prioritization. So for customers, prioritization is done on the second level, SE, OSI, or will it going to be provide a higher level prioritization
on second level of OCI model? And Link, Young Link, as he knows, uses prioritization on third level OCI model. So the question is if it will be changed or not, or will Link be support prioritization on second level of OCI?
Yeah. So, interestingly enough, I have a networking background, so I can understand your question a little bit better. So you're talking about layer 2 marking versus layer 3 marking. What we used to do and what we recommend people to do as well, especially since now we are in this we're now in this technology of not having dedicated media endpoints. I talked about a phone being a dedicated media endpoint, and it's really a waste of money to have this. So now we have endpoints that share a bunch of different characteristics. So for them to mark packets on the cause layer, the COS layer, which is layer 2, it doesn't make a lot of sense. What does make sense is for the networking fabric underneath to take a look at the layer 3 marking, which is the DiffServ code point marking or the TOS bit, and take that marking and translate that marking onto the layer 2 to say, okay, this is a voice packet coming from Link because we know the port, we know the DHCP marking. Let's set a layer 2 priority, precedence 5 or whatever, from a cause layer and transmit that on the LAN network. So that's what we recommend. I don't think that we have any thought of putting cause layer 2 markings in the applications. I don't think we're going to do that, no. Thank you. Any other thoughts or questions or concerns? I have 1 minute, I'm being told by the great gentleman in the back. So if there's no more questions, I thank you very much for your time. Thank you for listening to Link at TechEd. We had a great, great time here. We have a fantastic team that will have a few more sessions today. I'm available here for another hour if you need to talk about Link or anything that your organization is doing around UC. Happy to have those questions, but thank you very much. Спасибо. Thank you.